T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Alongside my man Wade Smith, 12-year NFL vet. Breaking news, ladies and gentlemen. The Texans have given Coach Bill O'Brien the general manager's title, and they've promoted Jack Easterby to executive vice president of football operations. And the man that broke the news, our guy, Hall of Famer, John McClain. General, how you doing, man?
Clayton Wade, I'm doing great. How are you?
We're doing well, man. Well, tell us about it. I don't know that this changes a whole hell of a lot of how things are operating over there on Kirby, but it sure makes some things official.
And that's exactly the way to put it, Clint. It doesn't change anything. As Cal McNair told me when I talked to him, he said, this is the way we've been operating for the last 8 months. And then he put out a statement later explaining why he did it. But the roles that O'Brien and Easterby have. And Easterby is really the assistant GM, but he's got a title now that's bigger than assistant GM, but still under the GM. They're operating exact same way, but this ends a lot of speculation for people hoping they'd hire another general manager or thinking that Nick Caserio would come as a general manager. And but it'll be business as usual with them. And there's other changes. You know, we already know about Anthony Weaver being promoted defensive coordinator. Romeo Cornell stay on as like assistant head coach like he was in 2017. Mm-hmm. They have other changes on the coaching staff. And I would imagine the personnel department has to stay the same because this is the biggest time of the year for the personnel department, and most of their contracts expire after the draft. So I would expect we will see more changes in personnel after the draft.
John, you mentioned the obviously it puts to bed the thoughts of Caserio and some of those other guys. Are there any positions or additions to the quote unquote panel that you think are still need to be filled at this point in time, or do you think that the main decision makers are in the building and they're ready to rock and roll moving forward?
Well, there's only one decision maker, and that's O'Brien. Easterby takes his orders from O'Brien, and Bill answers to Janice and Cal McNair. And Easterby does a lot of things for O'Brien, which is like what an assistant GM does. And I think that Cal McNair is spending a lot of money. And so if they have somebody, they say they want to create a new position, then he'll let them do it. And problem is some of those positions are open right now because anybody in personnel other than coaches, their contracts don't expire till after the draft. So this is not a surprise. I think that, I've been talking to you guys about it since before the season ended. They might as well go ahead and hire O'Brien since that's what he is. And so they don't get any extensions. They're not getting raises. They're just getting titles. As McNair said, that reflects the roles they've been handling for the last 8 months. But I do expect more people to get promotions, and I expect more changes in the organization.
John, when you talk about Bill O'Brien now officially being the GM, he's also the head coach, of course. How do you think this affects the idea of him being the play caller and the whole offensive coordinator situation? Do you think this changes anything as far as in that regard?
I don't think this has got anything to do with that because he did it all last year. Now, if he decides he thinks Tim Kelly is ready to take over play calling in his second season as coordinator, if he does that, then it tells me he's had it planned all along. And we may not even know about it till they get to training camp, players start talking about it, because I don't know that O'Brien would ever even disclose that. But I don't think, since they're operating exactly the same way, I don't think it changes anything that happened last season.
John, there was also some other personnel cuts that were actually, I believe, announced either yesterday or earlier this morning. Director of player.
They haven't announced anything. The only thing they've announced is they just put out a release about this. Anything you've been reading about it is all things that have leaked out. because they're yet to announce any of these coaching deals.
Right. No, this has nothing to do with coaching. It's director of player engagement, J.J. Moses, essentially a strength and conditioning, Billy Voltaire, Jason George, Eva Graham, Amber Davies. Anything jump off that list of personnel cuts that have been made?
You know, Aaron Wilson reported that this morning. The one that interests me the most was J.J. Moses in original text when he was there. He's very well liked. I'm guessing Jack Easterby's got somebody that he worked with in New England, South Carolina, or Kansas City that he wants in that role. I believe that when they have changes coming, a lot of the people we see coming into this organization are going to be people that worked with Easterby and possibly Bill O'Brien, but especially Easterby.
John, based off of what you've seen out of the Houston Texans this year, the way the moves they've been made, they gave Whitney Mercilus a deal during the season going on, the different trades that were made, would you say that you from going forward, you can't really look into the past of the way the Houston Texans operated to kind of predict what you're going to get out of Bill O'Brien as the GM and under the current structure?
The only thing I believe we can predict, Wade, based on what we've seen from Trader Bill since he got all the power, is he's not going to sit on his hands. What he does as general manager, same thing he did with the general manager without the title, he's going to be aggressive when it comes to making moves, whether that's trades, signings, pursuing free agents, not bringing back players. I don't see him standing pat. I think he's going to be like Daryl Morey. He's going to always be making moves. And that's my opinion based on what we've seen, probably going back to when he made those deals on August 31st. When he made the Tunsil deal, Steele's deal, the Carlos Hyde. I think we're going to see more of that, of Trader Bill.
That's Hall of Famer John McClain joining us on Sports Radio 610, Houston Sports Leader. John, last one, man. Priorities. I mean, now you got the defensive coordinator in place. You know what the scheme's going to be. Obviously, it's about players making whatever moves you need to, retaining guys, going and finding guys. You've got the GM in place now from a title standpoint at least. What's the priority? Where does the priority lay? Who is the priority moving forward as far as getting players either in-house signed or going out and finding some guys?
Free agency and the draft, they're working on it around the clock, and then they've got to decide, can they get Watson, Tunsil, and Zach Cunningham signed to an extension? They don't have to sign them. They could let them go into the last year of their contract, but they want to re-sign them. O'Brien has told us that. And who's going to do those contracts now that Chris Olsen is gone? And once they get ready, free agency comes in March, they're going to be active on the free agent market. Now, I don't think they'll spend a lot because I don't think they're going to have a lot to spend based on what they have to spend on their own guys. And they have to target the defense the way they did the offense last year. I think the offense doesn't need a lot of upgrading when it comes to personnel, but the defense sure does, especially the pass rush and the pass coverage.
John, man, we appreciate you taking the time to join us with this breaking news. Bill O'Brien officially named the GM for the Houston Texans by owner Cal McNair. John, appreciate you, man.
Hey, Clint, Wade, thank you very much, and I'll be talking to you from Miami on Friday. Thank you.
Look out, man. Have a good one. Safe travels, my brother. Wade, anything jump off the airwaves right there with John McClain?
Well, I mean, he's been saying that this has been the case for the longest now. And so This just further cements what he's been saying, that, hey, Bill O'Brien has been the man over there making all the decisions. And it's not going to necessarily determine what's going to happen with the offensive coordinator position because he did it last year. So that part gives me extreme concern because – now there's no gray area anymore. There used to be gray area where you said, okay, supposedly he's the GM and the buck stops with him, but he's got all these other people helping him. Now, you know, he is the GM and he is the head coach and he's calling plays on Sunday. And then when you hear certain things that are said in press conferences about not having a play or decisions that get made and throughout the course of the game, you're like, all right, is this dude spread too thin? Is this something that he needs to get somebody in here to help him with these roles? And so, Tim Kelly being the offensive coordinator, that's a huge unknown. You don't know what you're going to get out of him because he came up under Bill O'Brien. If you get more of the same, then I don't think a lot of people are going to be excited about that that are following the Houston Texans. So that was the big thing that jumped out to me, was that he basically said that it's going to be more of the same. as far as the play calling scenario.
You know, Wade, I think there's some validity to the thought or the point of all the hats that Bill O'Brien wears, and then because you've seen him at practice. I mean, it's a GM head coach role at practice. There's other people that are handling the quarterbacks. There's other people that are handling the play calling, literally handling the huddles in team drills and in goal line drills and in, you know, any 11-on-11, 7-on-7, any kind of drill like that. Tim Kelly's handling those things. There's and then on Sundays, there's no – or game days, there's no doubt about it, Bill O'Brien's calling the plays. There is a disconnect when that's the case. You know, does that make sense? Like, my experience working and playing the game, like whoever you're communicating with on a daily basis in the huddle and in drills is the guy that needs to be pulling the trigger and making the decisions on game day. Whether we like it or not, if Tim Kelly's that guy, I think that's an upgrade. There's just something about
just
that.
Just because it takes it off of his plate, off of Bill O'Brien's plate.
It takes it off his plate and it allows him to do other things and manage the game differently. But more importantly, Wade, is the guy that knows that huddle as well, if not better, than Deshaun Watson is the one that's calling the plays, you know, is the one that's making the decisions. He knows the personalities and what buttons to push of every single player in that huddle because his head is in that huddle every day at practice, making sure the play call is called right, making sure Deshaun Watson sees the checks, making sure – so it's not secondhand that Bill O'Brien's getting now, well, Deshaun struggled with that throughout the week. Maybe we shouldn't use that. You got personal experience of I saw Deshaun Watson struggle with identifying that particular blitz and adjusting the protection, and so, hell, I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to go there on game day. You know, that disconnect of what Bill O'Brien does on a daily basis of being more of a manager at practice and a manager of people and then calling plays on game day is it's tough to think that he could have his finger on the pulse of that huddle, so to speak, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense, and that's why a lot of times teams have this structure where you have a GM, you have a head coach, and you have an offensive coordinator, and they're three different people. Yeah. You know what I mean? So yeah. Anytime that you can take one of those hats off of one person, I'm for it. You know what I mean? And so especially if Bill O'Brien is going to be, as John McClain called him, Trader Bill, I can rock with that. Yeah. It's very enjoyable to watch. You bring in good players, and there's a lot of moves getting made. There's a bunch of stuff for us to talk about, so I can rock with that.
Yes, Houston Astros, baby. The Houston Astros. Looks like they got him a manager, ladies and gentlemen. And you know what? Done a little digging. It's kind of like one of them Super Bowl head coaches over there. Got a similar career, similar resume. We'll talk about that next right here on Sports Radio 610. Joined by 12-year NFL vet, former Houston Texan offensive lineman, Wade Smith. Wade, going into this thing, man, I told you, them old Astros, they got him a manager, man.
Yeah.
Looks like they got him a manager. Dusty Baker appears to be the manager of the future for the Houston Astros. And it's Super Bowl week. It's Super Bowl week, so I thought, what the hell? Let's do a little comp game with the one and only Andy Reid, my man.
Okay.
When you look at these two coaches' career, Wade, manager and head coach, I'm sorry. When you look at these two coaches' careers, they're very, very similar. Andy Reid's got 20 seasons as a head coach. Dusty Baker's got 22 seasons as a head coach. Neither have a championship. Both of them have had a ton of success in the playoffs.
They've both been very close.
Both have been very, very close. Both of them are long, long in the tooth. Dusty Baker, three-time manager of the year. When you look at
Andy Reid.
Andy Reid, you've got AP Coach of the Year in 2002. Maxwell Club NFL Coach of the Year four different times, Pro Football Weekly Coach of the Year in 2002, Sporting News Coach of the Year three different times. So both of these guys, Wade, are very, very well respected in the league. Both of these guys have been very close. They've tasted it. That right is so close that you can taste it. The pinnacle, the World Series or the Super Bowl. So when I look at these two guys, man. They are right there, and at the end of their career where, and I don't know how much time Andy Reid's got left. He's obviously not 70 years old, but I bet he's closer than we think. I don't know exactly how old Andy Reid is, but he's they're right there to where they've been at this thing for a long, long time, man. And so when I talk about the Astros hiring Dusty Baker, I think first and foremost that they got it right, man. They got a guy that's long in the tooth. They got a guy that's been close. They've got a guy that to me, has fought through adversity, and ultimately they got the right guy. Major League Baseball insider Bob Nightingale, he addressed earlier on In the Loop with Landry Lopez and John Lopez, Landry Locker and John Lopez. I made him son and
father dad, and son.
Father and son, didn't I right there?
I don't think Landry liked that too much.
Hey, look, I'd be more worried about Lopez not liking it than I would be Landry not liking it. But
I think Landry would be a good son, man.
Yeah, he'd be right? All right. He'd slap him around, man, a little bit. But Bob Nightingale, obviously a great covers Major League Baseball, has for many years, MLB insider. He talked about Dusty Baker earlier being the right hire.
He's been through that. He went to the war with Bonds when Bonds broke the record, all that noise, all the scrutiny, wherever the Giants went, the whole steroid era, Pittsburgh drug trial era, you know, you name it, strikes. So he was there, and he's such a tough guy, and such a player's manager. You know, I think they'll just kind of ride him in his coattails and let him kind of try to deflect all the criticism and booing and taunts again the road.
Yeah, look, so I just think that when you first things first, the priority, it's right here, right now. What does this Astros team need in a manager? And I believe it's a guy that's been through adversity. We talked about it. The San Francisco Giants years when Dusty Baker was the manager with Bonds and the steroids issues. He was in Chicago with Cubs and the Bartman issue and the drought in the playoffs there for the Cubs. So he's handled the media in big cities. He's handled scandals, so to speak. He's been in tough situations, and he's known for handling that the right way and facing that adversity head on. And I just think when there's several things, and you can tell by the text line, and we'll take some callers later on about Dusty Baker and about Bill O'Brien and get the pulse of the city. But, you know, you can tell there's several different angles on this thing, Wade. But first and foremost, for the Houston Astros and what they needed in a manager was a guy that you knew, not thought could handle it,
yeah,
but you knew would be able to handle the next year or two, training camp coming up the day after Valentine's Day. The immediate right now, be where your feet are, have to handle this adversity. Dusty Baker answers that issue.
Yeah, the first guy coming off the bus when you're going to spring training is the Wolf. He is a fixer. He's the type of guy that's been through and seen and dealt with in a very, very productive way negative situations. So if you're Jim Crane, you're the owner of the organization, you're trying to bring somebody in here to navigate you through these muddy waters of being on the forefront of the cheating scandal, you want to bring in a guy like Dusty Baker. He's the type of guy that's not going to flinch through all of the adversity that's going to face the Houston Astros. And he, like you said, he's three-time manager of the year. He's the type of guy that's been very, very close, been on the cusp of winning the World Series, just didn't quite get over that hump. And if you're somebody that thinks about or believes in good karma or good vibes, he's somebody that everyone is going to be pulling for to get over that hump and win a World Series. And he's got all the guys that he needs to do so. This will be the best collection of talent that he's ever had the opportunity to manage. And so, yeah, first and foremost, it really didn't matter who was going to be the guy to be the manager as far as, and I don't want to say the X's and O's, but as far as putting guys in the right position to play baseball at a high level. You have a very, very, very talented ball club that has been through battles, tried and true, been to the World Series last year, made it to a Game 7, lost in the ALCS the year before and won the World Series the year before that. Most of the talent is still on this roster, and so it didn't take – you don't need a savant. You don't need a genius to be your manager, but you do need somebody that is going to be able to connect with the players, which is first and foremost the role of a manager in Major League Baseball. Dusty Baker is tried and true. Everyone knows that he's a great as far as the chemistry in the locker room. And so I think that Crane knocked this one out of the park.
Wade, it's text lines over here talking got me pissed off again.
What's going on now, man? What's a lot of angry people on the text line right now.
It's a little personal. Clint, with all due respect, it's obvious that you're a football player because you have no idea what you're talking about when you say Dusty Baker is a good manager. Okay, let me start with that. The last 4 years as a manager, Wade, in the Major League Baseball?
Yeah.
Take a guess at how many wins he averaged.
I would say like 96.
95.
Okay, I was close.
95.
I was close.
95 W's. That's an average.
Average.
His last 4 years that he was that he was a manager in this league. Three-time manager of the year. Some will debate whether he needs to win a World Series or not to get into the Hall of Fame. I choose to say that he's got a Hall of Fame career rocking and rolling. He's at the end of it, and if he gets a World Series, there's a pretty damn good chance that he's going to get in. So all due respect to the text line talker over here.
I like that, the text line talker.
All due respect.
The text line texter.
But I don't know. It don't matter if I played that table tennis. It ain't got nothing to do with what I played and what I didn't play. Those are facts, Jack. Those are facts. Number of wins, 1,863 wins. I don't remember the exact number. B-Mac, you may be able to help me, but I think if he gets to 2,000 wins, he'll be in the top 10 in wins by a manager in Major League Baseball history. I do believe. And so, I mean, look, I love the text line, and I like getting a little heated up. It reminds me that I got a heartbeat.
Yeah, makes you alive, makes you feel alive, baby.
But
go
come
out there
on,
and compete,
man.
Baby.
I'm so sick and damn tired of this. Oh, you're a football player. You're a football player. Man, that don't mean a damn thing. Dusty Baker is a really, 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 really good manager. He is a very good fit right now for the Houston Astros. Does he check every box? No, probably not. What's he going to do with analytics? He's been known in the past not to be real high on analytics and be at the forefront of this analytical age of baseball. But do you think the fact that he's 70 and the most important thing to him is to win a World Series and he's joining a team that is at the forefront of analytical baseball, do you think that might be something that he considers strongly and makes a very important push moving forward in continuing that success the Astros have had? Get the hell out of here, text line talker.
Listen, Clint, I find it very hard to believe that Dusty Baker is going to come in here and just completely try to overhaul everything that the Astros do. That just doesn't make any damn sense. You hear Jim Crane talking about in his press conference when he let go Luno and a hint that we have a system in place. We have a lot of guys that know how to work this system. I'm pretty sure that the large majority of the way things were done are going to continue to be done because that's the Astros' way of operating. Dusty Baker is here to manage the clubhouse. He's here to take the heat off of the players on a daily basis, dealing with the media and things of that nature. Dusty Baker is not going to come in here to try to overhaul the system. Yeah. Dusty Baker is going to come in here to do what he does, to be the fixer, and get the Astros to a World Series.
You make a great point. It's like, do you think Jim Crane became a billionaire making poor-ass decisions? You think he's literally going to take an organization that's had an absolute mountain of success based off of analytics and go, I'm going to bring this old boy in here. And I know he's not real high on analytics, but I'm going to bring him in here anyway and just let him totally neglect the analytical side of baseball in 2020. Come on, man. You got to be a fool if you think that Jim Crane's going to do something like that. Have a little faith in what's going on over there, man. We got – golly. Come on, man. Coming up next, we got Kurt Heeland, that lead NBA writer with NBCSports.com. Got a lot going on in the basketball world. And Rockets, they won a big one last night in impressive fashion. And Kobe Bryant, man, the tragedy of Kobe Bryant this weekend. We ain't through talking about that yet, man. So we got to dig a little deeper. Kurt Heeland of NBCSports.com coming up next right here on Sports Radio 610. Joined by Wade Smith, Houston. Okay, ain't outside. I don't know how bad that weather is. I know it was ugly earlier, baby. But you got some good news coming your way. Them Astros got them a man. Rockets got a big W last night. Joined now by Kurt Heeland, lead NBA writer with the NBCSports.com. Kurt, what's going on, man?
Been a little busy, but it's all good, man.
Hey, that's good. That means you're wanted, you're needed. The demand is high. Hey, am I saying that healing right? Is that how you say that?
That is correct. Yeah, you got it right. Good job, because I've been called a lot of things.
Hey, look, that's that Arkansas education, baby. That's that Arkansas education coming out. Hey, Kurt, I know you're all over the map with the NBA, man. And the tragedy of Kobe Bryant. I mean, it's something that, golly, man, I don't know if the NBA has ever seen anything like this or felt anything like this. I know you've done some reports of the global impact of Kobe's, the tragedy and I'm assuming the life of Kobe. You know, tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, well, the global impact is certainly part of his story. You know, he came of age while the league was becoming global, but he was the first guy to really put the work into it. You know, everybody goes on, you know, James Harden and Westbrook and all these guys go on shoe tours now, right, every summer to China and the Far East. Kobe was doing that before everybody. He was learning in a very Kobe way. He was learning the ways of what has to work out there. He had a separate, I believe still has, a separate Chinese charity that's different than his American foundations and charities. And he did all this work to ingratiate himself there and make himself famous. Now, in Chinese culture, it also helps to win, and Kobe did that. So, I mean, he really ingrained himself in a way there that it, you know, he created a roadmap for others to follow. Not only there, by the way, there's murals all over the Philippines, which is a basketball crazy country, for him in the capital city and stuff. That's just nuts. That was part of it. And then, you know, domestically, I think we're all still kind of coming to grips with it, aren't we? I mean, we're all still kind of just been taken aback by it. And you know, I'll tell you what came to my mind once everything settled down was not the year he was out with his Achilles. He would sometimes just kind of, he'd come in pregame and get his sweat on and, you know, try to get his work in. And sometimes he'd just come and sit in the locker room and there's no interview going on. He wasn't going to talk on the record about anything. He was just chatting up the reporters. I think he kind of missed the rapport with the regular beat guys and stuff. And then when I was there, I have three daughters. He had four daughters, and it's not just us. There's something in the water at Staples. Like, everybody just has a bunch of daughters. I'm not sure, like, all the reporters, like, some of the media members, like, and there'd become these conversations about being a dad and being a dad to young ladies and to young women and how to help them to grow up to be strong and confident people in, you know, in a society that doesn't always push for that. And you could see he not only loved, how deeply he loved and cared for his family, but also how much thought and effort he put into it, like he did basketball and everything else. But he really thought about, how can I better raise daughters? I love raising girls. How can I do this better? How can I help make them better people? And it was an insight that I didn't, you know, I don't know that Willie went public enough, or I think maybe started to the last couple of years when you could see more of the father side of him. He cared deeply about that and how to pass the unwavering confidence he had in himself along to his daughters.
As a father of four daughters myself, two of them athletes, I really, really enjoyed and appreciated Kobe Bryant's diving head forward into growing multiple games in women's sports, talking about basketball and volleyball. Can you talk to the people about some of the things that Kobe was doing and what a loss it would be in those communities since he's no longer here?
Yeah, and by the way, out here in Southern California, also, Gianna in particular, before she really got into AAU basketball and followed her father kind of that way, she played on some soccer clubs, so he sponsored a travel soccer team out here. Mamba Soccer Club. And she actually played against my daughter a couple times. It was kind of surreal. So he wanted to invest, but like I said, when we talked about it later, it wasn't just, hey, I can throw money and put up a club. It was, hey, if I do this, how do we do it right? How do I not only get girls and get good coaches and take care of the technical side? And he did this with the Mamba Academy out that he was on his way to when the accident happened. It wasn't just, hey, I can throw money at this and make a, you know, state-of-the-art building or a state-of-the-art club or AAU team. It's how can I do this in a way that makes these people, you know, better? How can it get them to not only do well in school, but teach them life lessons as well? And it's not just about sport. It needed to be about more than that for him. And that's the thing that, as like you said, as a father, just impressed me and made me happy, because ultimately, look, I've got two daughters playing travel soccer. One maybe could play, you know, like she's 13, you know, maybe someday she could play D2 or D3. She's not, you know, she's not headed to the national team. Maybe she could play at a small college someday. She's pretty good. But, you know, that said, what I want her to get out of it, what I want my daughters to get out of that, or whatever they're doing, dance or theater or whatever else they're doing, is life lessons and the things we always talk about with sports, like being part of a team, being part of a, making a commitment, sacrifices, putting in the effort, putting in the work, the things we want to teach you about life from sports. And he was all about that. And he was so focused on it. And that he's going to really be missed. That Mamba team was it was a great academy. I don't think the academy is going anywhere, but the academy and the team were changing the landscape out here, because he was able to kind of do things the right way.
Man, when you get a guy like Kobe, really, it doesn't have to be necessarily that big of a name, but when you get a guy behind something and he's pushing it with all of his heart, man, it's a powerful thing. Hey, you've also covered, and we've seen a bunch of the different tributes to Kobe. I think they're super cool. Last night, who was it? Was it Toronto that wore the 24 and 8s with Brian on the back?
Yeah, a couple teams did. I know. Detroit did as well. Yeah.
Well, they did that, and then you've seen the 24 second violations, followed by the 8 second violations that the Rockets did that last night to start the game. What are some of the cooler tributes that you've seen around the country and around the world? And then what do you expect? Is there anything down the pipeline with the All-Star game or anything like that that you expect?
I know that the league is thinking about it with the All-Star game and what they're going to do. The league's got a couple balls to balance there, because it's still David Stern too. You know, it's still, they were thinking about tributes for David Stern, and now this gets added on top, and they're trying to figure out, they got a couple weeks to put it together. I don't know that they've come up with that yet, but it is something they are considering. The Lakers obviously are not playing tonight. So I don't know what they would have done. I mean, I think what people forget is that, yeah, Kobe was a player with the Lakers, but he was with that franchise for 20 years. And his connections in that franchise on a personal level weren't just with the other players and the coaches. It went beyond the trainers. It went to the guys up and down that organization. He was a guy who knew everybody in the marketing department. And he went, in the basketball operations side, and the people who just put on the games. Like, everybody's in mourning there, because Kobe got to know and be invested in everything, because that's kind of who he was as a person. So I'm curious, on Friday night, Portland comes to town. Ironically, a club, I don't know if there's a franchise he tortured more in Portland with big games, comes to town, and it'll be interesting to see how they celebrate and honor him. That's coming, and I'm sure the league would like to do something, but I'm not sure what it is. I'm not sure that they've figured that out yet.
You mentioned it, that the game tonight has been postponed. What were your thoughts on that decision-making process that went into that? And then also, you know, what's your insight on what's going on behind the scenes with the players there, with the Lakers and Clippers and guys all over the league that are dealing with this situation? You know, are they getting grief counselors involved? What's kind of going on along those lines?
In the Lakers case, I know that there were some around, and not, by the way, again, not just with the players. They had them in the building for the organization, because so many of it, you kind of forget that this is still a family operation, especially in the Lakers case. I mean, it's not small. I mean, it's a big business, but it's not that many people in the grand scheme of things. It's not, you know, a Dell-sized corporation or Apple or something. It's relatively small, and they all were kind of connected. So they had grief counselors in. Said, I just don't think as an organization, I don't know if they could have put on a game today. Like, I don't know if they were ready to do that. So I appreciate that, and I understand why they didn't. I'm curious what would have happened on Sunday if there hadn't been day games. Remember, when this stuff really started to break, there was the Utah game, which was the early game for, let's be honest, and you guys have seen this too in Houston. They had that early Sunday game so they can have a Sunday primetime night game on in the European market, right? And it was Utah because of Rudy Gobert and French connections. So if that had been a night game, if there had been no day games, I wonder if they would have played that night. But by the time this really started to get rolling, those guys were – everybody traveled. Everybody was, in that case, was in the arena warming up. The fans were in the arena. It would have been really – it would have been really tough to pull the plug on that at that point. And then the other side of that is Kobe wouldn't have wanted that. Like, the last thing Kobe would have said is, don't play because of me.
You're speaking to – you're listening to Kurt Heelan, lead NBA writer for NBCSports.com on Sports Radio 610. Bringing it back home here to Houston, you got two L.A. guys that are prominent on this roster, yeah. James Harden and Russell Westbrook. Any insight on those two guys and how they're dealing with this and how it's going to go for those guys going forward with the loss of Kobe and that relationship that they had?
Yeah, they had it. I think a lot of guys did. I mean, Kobe had become such a mentor around the league. I mean, this hit Trey Young hard, who's not an L.A. guy. I know it hit some of DeRozan and some of the L.A. guys, the other L.A. guys as well, really hard, who had a good relationship with Kobe and had come up while he was – I mean, when you think about when Harden came up and when Russell Westbrook came up, Kobe was it in L.A. You know, like Kobe, that was Kobe and Shaq, you know. They came up idolizing him, and so it hits them on a real emotional level, and you've seen some – you've seen some big performances, by the way. Buddy Hield, who's was a big Kobe fan, just exploded last night for 42 and had a career high. And Trey Young had one of those games. We'll see who else does, but it's. I think it hits those guys, but those guys are also. They're such professionals, that, they will find a way to funnel this energy into their game and tribute and. You know, especially well in Harden's case when he's healthy enough to get back on the floor, funnel that into, hey, how can I? I guess I'll put it this way: the best way to play tribute to Kobe is to play as hard as Kobe, to come out and play in his style, you know, manner. And you know, you're not going to play Kobe's style. As James Harden, I love James Harden. I don't know that he's quite as athletic as Kobe on a raw athleticism scale, but. You can play hard. You can do the things that made Kobe special, and I think you'll see that from those guys.
Kurt, you cover the NBA. You're one of the best in the business, man. What I mean, let's talk about the Rockets. Smitty brought the Kobe tragedy back to Houston and how it relates to a couple of the players. But let's talk about the Rockets in general, man. I mean, you know, the West is an absolute monster. You know, they've got Westbrook in house now. You know, you know, they got a lot ahead of them as far as working the chemistry out and figuring out how to use both of those guys and get the most out of them. Mandy, are you a believer that the Rockets are set up as of right now from a personnel standpoint to compete in the West?
Define compete, I guess, is the question. Do I think that they can knock off the Lakers or Clippers if those teams are healthy and focused in the playoffs? If, you know, healthy and loaded for bear, I'm not sure that they are. I'm not sure that they're that level yet. And I'm not sure, to be honest with you, if there's a move at the deadline that gets them there, just considering the players that are available right now. And that could shift a little as teams start to sell closer to the deadline, but we'll see. But like you said, I think the other part of it is that gap, this isn't a, even the gap to the Lakers-Clippers isn't, and I'm assuming that the Clippers at some point get healthy, isn't... it's not like the Warriors, right, of a couple of years where you're like, man, I don't know. And the Rockets obviously almost had them a couple of years ago, but that was always the target. And I'm not sure that the gap feels as big this year. So if they're not right, I think that this team could get there. But obviously their chemistry has to get a little stronger. Their defense has to be more consistent. They've got to get Eric Gordon back to playing, you know, healthy and then back to playing at his level. Obviously, James Harden, is anybody actually worried about him coming out of his slump? I mean, he'll be fine. You know, he hit a little slump, but he'll be fine. They've just kind of got to be clicking on all cylinders, because I don't think that the gap between Utah and Houston and Denver and even those top teams is really all that great. And it's really going to be about hitting everything kind of in stride and being healthy and having Clint Capella, you know, playing strong defense and everything at the right time. And everybody's trying to time that out right now.
That's Kurt Helan, lead NBA writer with NBCSports.com. Kurt, we appreciate you taking the time to come on with us today, man. I know you're a busy man. Thank you very much.
Take care.
You got it, man. Wade, when you're talking about the Rockets and about what I loved hearing from him right there was he said if they can get Eric Gordon ready to rock and roll, in shape, shooting the rock well, as he's saying it, I almost said, bro, he hit 50 last night. What else you want? but no, I mean, as he's saying it, I'm thinking, good, it's music to my ears because it appears that in a time where Westbrook's getting load managed and Harden is a little bit banged up, Capella is getting that downtime, that much needed rest. It appears that Eric Gordon's coming around and able to fill it up pretty quickly.
Yeah, we've been saying it for the longest, man. That you know, Eric Gordon's space, the spacing that he brings to the offense, and the ability to put the ball in the bucket and be a guy that's instant offense. You love that about him. I think for the Rockets to get to that next level though, and really compete with the two LA teams and a team like Denver. They're going to need to make a move. I don't know what that move is going to be, and I think a piece to that move is going to have to probably end up being Clint Capella. But they're going to have to figure out something different to where they can have a guy that can give you something offensively facing the basket that is a four or a five on the roster, and they don't have that right now. You need that for spacing purposes. When you got a guy like Capella that can play well in the pick and roll game and get you some dunks, which is fine. It works. You know, some games he has beautiful outings and he goes for 20 and 20 or 22 and 22, whatever you may call it. But when he gets against the big boys, against the Jokic's and the Gobert's of the world, he struggles against those guys. If you can't be somebody that gets those big guys out of the paint, it's going to be tough to get past those guys in the second round of the playoffs. And especially if you get to a finals where you're going against one of the LA teams, it's going to be a struggle. You have to deal with the Dwight Howard or something like that. They're going to have to figure out a move. And to me, Capella is the piece that makes that happen.
Wade, what do you make of Eric Gordon scoring 50? I mean, it's obviously beautiful. I like Eric Gordon. It's very helpful for me to sit here and go, boy, well, Eric Gordon's a straw that stirs a drink. When he's hot, man, his Rockets can play, you know?
Yeah.
So when he goes out and scores 50, I'm like, hell yeah. But when I look at it, it's like we make so much about Harden scoring 40 and scoring 50 and scoring 60 and filling it up at will. I mean, in today's game, do you think Eric Gordon scoring 50? Do you think that? I mean, I don't know is Harden going and scoring 50? Is it still as big a deal given the fact that Gordon can go out there and do it when he's the guy handling the rock the most of the time?
It's a big deal just in case those guys are off. If you have multiple options on your offense that can score buckets, and if Harden is having an off night or Westbrook is having an off night, and you have a guy like Gordon that can keep you in a ball game, or when those guys, you know, one or two of those guys might be on the bench, and you have a guy like Gordon that can keep a lead or stretch out a lead against an opposing team's bench, you always need and you want players like that on championship caliber ball clubs. So, yeah, I think it means something that you know you have a guy like that on the roster. You just have to figure out a way to make sure you utilize him and make sure you keep up with that ball movement and kind of what he mentioned in his post-game press conference, interviews that he's like, hey, man, if we move the ball well, you're going to get open looks and guys are going to be able to get open shots, and get open shots equals open buckets. And if you're hitting open threes against teams, they're going to have a tough time stopping the Rockets because they can penetrate and finish, and there's multiple guys that can do it.
That's 12-year NFL vet Wade Smith. I'm Clint Sterner. You're listening to Sports Radio 610, Houston sports leader. The Astros, they appear – to be getting a final deal in place with longtime Major League Baseball manager Dusty Baker to be the next Astros manager and fill out that lineup card that AJ Hinch used to do so beautifully. It looks like Dusty Baker's in line for that managerial position. We've got John Heyman, Radio.com Sports MLB Insider. John Heyman joining us next to talk about Dusty Baker, the Astros, and everything in between.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.